Welcome to Vermont Edition. I'm Bob Kinzel. In just a few days, voters in Iowa will go to their neighborhood caucus sites to kick off the 2016 presidential race. When Democratic candidate Bernie Sanders launched his campaign in May, few political observers gave him much of a chance to seriously challenge former Secretary of State Hillary Clinton. But the latest polls in Iowa show the race is a dead heat. Recently, VPR's Pete Hirschfeld asked Sanders about his journey over the past 8 months.
Well, it's wild. You know, we have been drawing huge crowds. And we've been drawing really a lot of people even in very small towns. And the nature of the Iowa caucus, which is different than a Vermont primary or a New Hampshire primary, is that it matters where people are located. So we've been focusing on a lot of small and medium-sized towns in order to make sure that we get a decent number of delegates in all areas of the state.
Why has Sanders done so well? What's the outlook for the Iowa caucuses on Monday night and the New Hampshire primary on Tuesday, February 9th? These are some of the questions we have for our guest today, two people who have been following this race very closely, Megan Remmel, who's a political science professor at Norwich University, and retired Middlebury College political science professor Eric Davis. Great to have you both back on the program again.
Thank you for having me.
Good afternoon, Bob.
So, Megan, let's try to put the success of the Sanders campaign in some perspective. Back in May, did you ever think that he would be virtually tied with Hillary Clinton 3 days before the Iowa caucuses?
Oh, I feel like a failure. No, I did not see this coming. I certainly understood that he would have an appeal to certain segments of the population, but his message has been able to spread to a wider demographic than I was anticipating. And as he told Casey Hunt on NBC, don't underestimate me, and I underestimated him. And he has done a much better job, especially in the last few months, of reaching out to segments of the population that aren't typically in his socialist wheelhouse, and surprised a lot of us.
I think a lot of people, a lot of political observers have been totally surprised by how well he's done. So what's the secret of his success?
I think he's got some of the same appeal that a candidate like Donald Trump has. It's just packaged a little differently. He's got some of the same anger, some of the same fire, some of the same emotion that a candidate like a Trump has, but he also has a more optimistic spin. So I think he is able to appeal to groups in society who feel disadvantaged but are also simultaneously hopeful, kind of groups of population, particularly younger voters, who are disaffected, who are could be prime targets for somebody like a Donald Trump, but are also more optimistic about how they can have an impact on the future.
Eric, what are your thoughts about why the Sanders campaign has seemed to connect with so many voters?
Well, Bob, Sanders has done well in Iowa and New Hampshire, according to the polls, journalistic accounts, and so forth. But I'm still rather cautious about his national appeal and his ability to put together all the components that are needed to win the Democratic nomination for president. And the reason I say that is he's doing very well among two constituencies, middle-class white professionals and young voters. And both of them make up a larger proportion of the electorate in Iowa and New Hampshire than they do nationally. But there are two other very important constituency groups in the Democratic Party. One is diverse voters, African-American voters and Latino voters, especially in states in the South and Southwest. So far, every indication we have from polls, at least, is that Hillary Clinton is maintaining strong support among those groups. The second group are working-class voters in traditional manufacturing and industrial occupations, especially in Midwestern states like Ohio and Michigan and Illinois. While Sanders has some union endorsements, they tend to be from public employee unions rather than manufacturing and industrial unions. Now, the leaders of those unions are pragmatists often, and if they see a Sanders wave coming, they may jump on it. But to date, he hasn't yet connected with the rank-and-file manufacturing and industrial workers to the extent that he has with the middle-class progressives. And there's another group that's important in determining who the Democratic presidential nominee is, and that's the so-called superdelegates, members of Congress, governors, members of the Democratic National Committee, and other party and elected officials. There's about 700 of them, and they make up about a third of the total number of votes needed to win the Democratic nomination. And so far, Bernie Sanders has very, very few of them. I believe he has 8 members of the House who've endorsed him out of a Democratic House contingent of about 200. So even if he wins Iowa, which would be, I admit, unexpected, and even if he wins New Hampshire, which wouldn't be so unexpected, he has a long way to go in 48 other states and with the superdelegates to be on the platform in the summer and taking the accepting the Democratic nomination.
Eric, am I right that these superdelegates, they're not committed or they may be pledged to Hillary Clinton, but they're not mandated to vote for her in the first round?
No, they aren't. And of those, as the Associated Press is trying to run a keep a running tally of them, and of the members, focusing particularly on the members of Congress. And as I said, only 8 have announced their support for Senator Sanders, and a couple hundred have announced their support for Hillary Clinton when you add together House and Senate members. Now, that doesn't mean that when the roll call is called, they will vote the way they're telling the AP now. Again, strong public support for Sanders in a range of states, particularly their home states, could lead them to change their minds.
Today on the program, we're looking at the Democratic race for president next Monday night, the Iowa caucuses. Your thoughts? Give us a call at 1-800-639-2211. Your thoughts about this Democratic presidential race? Perhaps you support Hillary Clinton. Maybe you support Bernie Sanders. Tell us why. Maybe you've got some questions about the Iowa caucuses. Maybe you're undecided. Let us know what the factors are that could influence your vote. And what are the major issues you feel these candidates should be addressing? And are they? 1-800-639-2211. You can always send us an email at vermontedition@vpr.net. Better yet, give us a call, 1-800-639-2211. Megan, few people could have predicted how this political year has unfolded. The so-called establishment candidates certainly having a lot of trouble in the Republican primary. Do we see that as a factor in the Democratic primary as well?
I think it's a factor, but certainly not to the degree that it is in the Republican side of things. We have what are called alignments and realignments and de-alignments, where the coalitions of who supports which parties change. And there seems to be some kind of realignment happening with the Republican Party right now between all of these quote-unquote lanes, the establishment lane, the Tea Party lane, the anti-establishment lane. John Kasich mandates that he has his own lane. So there does seem to be much more of that debate internally in the Republican Party about what the Republican Party is going to be in the future. I think with the Democratic Party, they're currently having some debate over establishment versus anti-establishment, but I think that's partly characteristic of the more heads versus hearts argument that the Democratic Party tends to have about, do we want to take the more idealistic and kind of reach for the sky sort of perspective that I think a Bernie Sanders candidacy represents versus a more pragmatic and a more possibly politically feasible approach that the Hillary Clinton campaign takes. And it really comes down to what the voter prioritizes. If the voter prioritizes making sure that the candidate's messages get out there and that these issues are talked about, then maybe a Bernie Sanders vote makes sense. If you really do want to see some kind of action in the next 4 years with what is bound to be another Republican Congress, a Bernie Sanders doesn't seem like such a great vote, just because there will be absolutely no movement whatsoever between the presidency of a Bernie Sanders and a Republican Congress. So there is this establishment, anti-establishment tenor in the Democratic Party, but to me it represents more of a common problem that Democrats have of head versus heart, whereas the Republican battle is more of a battle for the identity of what the future ideology represented by the Republican Party is going to be.
You know, when I hear Hillary Clinton making that argument, I kind of wonder, is a Republican Congress, if in fact the Republicans maintain their control of the House and the Senate, is a Republican Congress any more likely to try to compromise and get along with Hillary Clinton than Bernie Sanders?
That is an excellent question. I mean, these are members who want her indicted for a variety of offenses. I think it comes down to, well, do you want to take an optimistic look at a Bernie Sanders presidency and say, well, he's going to propose that the minimum wage be $15 an hour and the Republicans are never going to accept that. So maybe we end up with a minimum wage increase of and end up with something happening at the $12 an hour range versus a Hillary Clinton, who's kind of already at the $12 an hour range and doesn't have as much room or as much ground to cover with Congress to get them on board with it, but is already kind of starting from a lower negotiating position. And so maybe the change that you get is actually more incremental under a Clinton campaign just because there's less ground to have to cover. So I think the idea of Congress working with Clinton is also debatable, certainly. But there is, I think, probably a more pragmatic behind-the-scenes approach that she can take to make some of these backroom deals, whereas Bernie Sanders is going to be so ideologically distant from the bulk of the Republicans in Congress that it could end up that you get a compromise, or it could end up that we get even worse gridlock than we have today.
Eric, you've covered politics for a number of years. Have you ever seen a year like this one?
No. I've been following American elections for close to 40 years now, and this is the one that I think least falls into the patterns that the conventional wisdom, whether it's the wisdom of academic or journalistic pundits, would explain. I'd like to pick up on some of the points you and Megan were just talking about regarding a Sanders presidency versus a Clinton presidency. In my view, in domestic policy that requires legislative action, there would be very little difference between the two of them, because both of them will run into gridlock with a Republican Congress the same way President Obama has. I think in terms of appointments to the Supreme Court and the federal judiciary, there would not be much difference between them. Where I see the differences would be appointments to the federal regulatory agencies and the economic policymaking agencies. I think Clinton would appoint a very different sort of person to the Treasury Department and the financial regulatory agencies than Sanders would. Sanders would appoint people who want to come down much harder on big financial institutions, impose much tougher regulation, whereas at least some of Clinton's appointees are likely to come from Wall Street itself. And in foreign policy, again, I would see differences there, where a Clinton presidency would be more interventionist. You're not sending huge American troops abroad necessarily, but more interventionist in getting involved in conflicts in the Middle East and elsewhere, and more supportive of free trade agreements, even though she's come out against the TPP at the moment, whereas Sanders would be less willing to get involved in international coalitions. And it would be a much tougher barrier to get trade agreements through to get a President Sanders to accept them than a President Clinton.
And Eric's right. Bernie Sanders is already trying to block the nomination of the new head of the FDA, the Food and Drug Administration, as being a doctor who's got too close a ties to the pharmaceutical industry. So I wholeheartedly agree that some of how they operate will look substantially different.
Today in the program, we're looking at the Democratic presidential race, the Iowa caucuses, next Monday night. Your thoughts, 1-800-639-2211. Let's talk to Mark in Fletcher. Hi, Mark. Welcome to the program.
Hello, you all. Thank you for the time. With all due respect to your guests, I hear them pandering to the status quo, which is the Republican moderate and a moderate coalition, whatever it is, and the status quo moderates in the Democrat Party. Bernie Sanders is willing to take that on. Hillary Clinton is saying to us, well, you know, don't expect much change, but I'll keep you at the table and we'll work all our deals and keep the status quo going, but the country is not in a mood for that. You can see it on the fringes with the Trump side and the Bernie side. I think in the long run, a lot of people who think Trump is sympathetic will come to their senses, especially young, rational, intelligent Republicans, and find that Bernie is much more open. And Bernie is going to force the issues that Hillary is trying to duck and smooth over and try to make it look good. And, you know, we're going to get chicken soup instead of the full turkey with Hillary. And it's important that Bernie forces the issues in public as a president. And that is what will instigate the revolution he's talking about, because people will not stand for things going the way they are, behind deals and all this going on. And I think that is the kind of strength that Bernie will bring to the presidency, while, you know, Hillary's just a holding action for the status quo's demise.
All right, Mark, we certainly appreciate your phone call. Let's turn to Ken in Ticonderoga. Hi, Ken, what's on your mind?
I think we need new talking heads. How long are you going to be wrong and let them continue to be talking heads? Number two, labeling Bernie as a socialist again, Megan, that's unfair. The guy won 71% of the vote in his last election. That's not socialism. That's populism. So let's think about recycling, cycling in some new talking heads, because these guys have been wrong for 6-8 months.
Well, Ken, in all fairness, Bernie describes himself as a democratic socialist. He doesn't run away from that label whatsoever.
Democratic socialist.
Right.
I didn't hear democratic socialist. I heard socialist. I heard fringe. I heard radical. And it's enough of that stuff. Literally, when a guy wins 71% of the vote in a state that is split just like the rest of the country, 28%, 30% Democratic, 26% Republican, and 46% Indy, that says he's a populist. So let's just pack that stuff up and back it up, because he didn't win 14 elections being a socialist.
All right, Ken. Today in the program, we're looking at the Democratic presidential race. Love to get your thoughts. 1-800-639-2211. This is Vermont Edition on VPR. Welcome back to Vermont Edition. I'm Bob Kinzel. Today we're looking at the Democratic presidential race, the Iowa caucuses on Monday night, and then on Tuesday, February 9th, we have the New Hampshire primary. Our guest today, Megan Remmel, who's a political science professor at Norwich University and retired Middlebury College political science professor Eric Davis. Your thoughts, 1-800-639-2211. So, Megan, according to all the polls, Bernie Sanders does much better with younger voters than Hillary Clinton. These are probably the voters who are under 40. Why do you think that's true?
I think, judging from my interactions with my students, there is a lot of disaffection. There is a lot of a sense of isolation. There is a sense of despair is too strong a word, but feeling like this is what government is going to look like from here on out, and almost a sense of okay, so this is never going to change. Bernie Sanders is offering a drastic alternative. And it has an appeal to a group of people who have never experienced a more functional government. The polarization and the gridlock that we've experienced in the last 20 or so years, for a lot of these younger voters, this is all they know. They don't know that government can be more functional, that even under a divided government, you can still pass bills if things are more civil and less polarized. So I think he's offering them a message that was somewhat comparable to a Barack Obama message. The packaging is certainly different. You don't have kind of the young, hip, basketball-playing young father. It's the kind of exact opposite of that, in fact. But he's offering the same kind of dissatisfaction, and that it's not just them that feels dissatisfied with the political system, that there are people of older generations who are also dissatisfied with the status quo, and is giving them hope that maybe their futures can look different.
So, Eric, is the key to success for Bernie Sanders in Iowa that all these young people who have been coming to see him speak, he's had thousands of people at different sites in Iowa, is the key that these people actually turn out to vote, and do you think they will?
Well, that's one of the keys. I was looking at some figures from Iowa last night, and in 2008, the last time there was a contested caucus there, the turnout was 240,000, which was phenomenal. That represents 40% of the registered Democrats in Iowa, and much of that turnout, high turnout, was due to the work of Barack Obama. And I think we're going to see something similar this year. If turnout is at or above 200,000, I think it's more likely that Bernie Sanders does well. But in the introductory piece you had, Bob, Sanders was talking about wanting to get delegate support from communities all over the state, including small communities. And that's important because of the way these caucuses work. This is not a primary that's a one-person, one-vote election. It's a caucus where Iowa has 99 counties, and there are multiple caucuses in each county. There's almost 1,700 caucuses all over the state of Iowa. And each one has a designated number of delegates to the county convention. And that number is determined in part by population and in part by the precinct's previous voting history. If Sanders turns out a huge number of supporters in places like Iowa City or Ames, which are the big university towns in Iowa, that doesn't increase the number of delegates those precincts are sending. What Sanders has to do is make sure that his supporters show up in the places where he has concentrations of enthusiastic supporters, like Iowa City and Ames and perhaps parts of some of the larger communities like Des Moines. But he also has to work on getting his supporters to the caucuses all over Iowa, in the rural communities in all 99 counties, because collectively the small towns in Iowa elect more delegates to the county caucuses than the big communities do.
And, Eric, the other thing is that candidates need to get 15% of the vote at any caucus to get credit for it. What do you think about the Martin O'Malley supporters? Maybe 3, 4, 5, 6% at some of these caucus sites when they have a reconfiguration of the people at the caucus site. Do you think a lot of those people go to Bernie Sanders?
That will be one of the things that may determine at the margins how, you know, one, if there's a district with, let's say, 10 delegates and, you know, O'Malley doesn't have enough to get one, and Bernie has, let's just say hypothetically, 5 and Hillary has 4, does it end up 6-4 or does it end up 5-5? And the O'Malley delegates in their reconfiguration could determine what that goes. And I suspect both candidates will have well-prepared strategies for their activists for when that moment comes in the caucus. Clinton will probably say, to use the phrase she's used on the campaign trail, I'm a progressive with results. I can accomplish things in Washington. As I indicated a few minutes ago, I have some reservations about that analysis. Sanders will argue that if O'Malley has been talking about the need for someone more progressive and more on the outside than Hillary Clinton, well, vote for me and get the real thing. So, you know, I think at the margin, the O'Malley people, and there aren't many of them, but they could determine the outcome of single delegates in many of these 1,000 or so caucuses. At the margin, the O'Malley delegates might be more persuadable by Sanders than by Clinton.
Let's go back to our callers and talk to Ann in Burlington. Hi, Ann. Welcome to the program. Ann, are you there? Well, we'll see if we can get Ann back. And in the meantime, we'll talk to Zachary, also calling from Burlington. Hi, Zachary.
Hello. Thanks for taking my call. I just wanted to address the heads versus heart dichotomy that has been a consistent talking point for the last couple of weeks and came up from one of your panelists there. And I think that dichotomy really ignores Bernie Sanders' 25-year history of bipartisan compromise in Congress. He's an independent. On the flip side of that, you know, Hillary Clinton is known as a rabid partisan, and I think it might even be more pragmatic to have Bernie Sanders in office because I think that his integrity really goes a long way to address the change that needs to happen.
Okay, Zachary, thanks very much for your phone call. It's going to be fascinating to see how voters do turn out in Iowa on Monday night, what the factors are, what the weather is like. And VPR will have some coverage on Monday night. We've got a reporter out there, so we'll be covering it live. Want to let you know about that. Megan, in the last couple of days, there's something that I think has been really interesting that's happened. The national news media a month ago, 2 months ago, would say things like, well, Bernie might do pretty well in Iowa, right? And if he does well, then that'll help him when he goes to New Hampshire. Now I'm hearing things like Iowa is a must win for Bernie Sanders if this campaign is going to be successful. Is that a fair shift?
Fair? I don't know if that's the right word I would use, but there's certainly this expectation now that Bernie's going to do well in Iowa. Now, does that mean he beats Clinton? That's negotiable, but that he is going to be competitive with her, and he's going to be competitive across the state. There is this expectation now, and that's an expectation that the media has painted, and so it's an expectation that voters around the country now kind of have adopted as their own for Bernie Sanders. So if, for some reason, he weren't to do as well as he as expected in Iowa, well, now it does seem like New Hampshire seems more pressure because it is a neighbor of Vermont, and there is this more independent streak. So it does make it seem like, well, that was a state that you should have won in New Hampshire. So if you don't get Iowa, then you better get New Hampshire, because if you don't get New Hampshire, then you just don't have a prayer in South Carolina and Nevada, which, again, is not necessarily fair. But there is a lot of psychology to this. There is a lot of gamesmanship. And if Clinton surrogates are now out on the campaign trail saying we expect this to be a very, very tight race, and Clinton ends up winning by 5-10%, then it does look like Bernie Sanders has almost failed. So because the expectations have shifted in his favor, that does mean that the expectations are higher. And if he, for some reason, fails to meet those, whatever those expectations are, it does put more pressure on a state like New Hampshire, where he should be doing well to begin with.
Eric, what do you think about this whole expectation theory?
Yeah, candidates end up running as much against expectations as they do as each other. I'll talk about what I would find a surprising result. I would find it a surprising result in Iowa if one of the candidates had a lead of 8% or more over the other. I think it's going to be very close, with a low to mid single-digit difference between Clinton and Sanders. In New Hampshire, on the other hand, at least if one relies on all the evidence from all the polls and that state's previous voting history, its proximity to Vermont, if Sanders doesn't exceed Clinton's vote percentage by 10% or somewhat more, I think that would be unexpectedly poor showing for Sanders in New Hampshire. Correspondingly, in South Carolina and Nevada, where everyone expects Clinton to win, if Sanders were to finish within 10% of Clinton in one or both of those states, that would be a better-than-expected finish for Sanders. And then it's important that listeners remember, these are only 4 of 50 states. On March 1st, the same day that Vermonters will be voting in our primary, there are 11 other states that hold primaries or caucuses that day. There's 8 states all across the South, plus Colorado, Minnesota, and Massachusetts. And those 12 states taken together will elect far more delegates than the 4 states that vote in February. Yet the media pays a lot more attention to the first 4 than they will the 12 on Super Tuesday, or some of the other big states like Ohio, Michigan, Illinois, and Florida that will be voting a little bit later in March.
Let's go back to our callers and talk to JP, who's calling from Morrisville. Hey, JP, welcome to the program.
Hey, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I just wanted to make a comment about voter turnout and what inspires people to vote. And obviously, we have a problem with it in this country. And I think a lot of it is because people really don't feel like their vote is going to matter, like the game is rigged and that they can't influence politics in the way they'd like to. And so looking at Bernie Sanders' campaign, he's received over 1 million different contributors, people that are actually going to be voting in this election. And when you compare that with, you know, Secretary Clinton's contributors, it's mostly corporate America, Goldman Sachs, Time Warner, Citibank. And so I think that that's what's going to inspire people to turn out to vote. And then if we have a candidate that's serious about campaign finance reform and we can actually fix Citizens United, that it'll inspire more people to turn out to vote in future elections. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, JP. And Megan, Bernie Sanders has gotten more individual contributions than any other presidential candidate in the history of this country. As JP mentioned, over 1 million. And I think the average contribution is roughly $30, which means that the Sanders campaign can go back to all these people and say, hey, how about another 30? How about a 50? If they do well in Iowa, do well in New Hampshire, they can try to raise money before Nevada and also South Carolina and coming into Super Tuesday. So does that give Sanders some staying power?
it gives him room to move, but I think some of these people who donated $30 can't necessarily afford to donate more than $30. So when Clinton has fewer donors but greater donor totals, she's maxing out those contributions and is getting the maximum. And yes, so these other donors will have room to move under finance law, where they can donate up to something like $2,600 or $2,700. These aren't people that necessarily are able to do so. So I think this could be kind of a double-edged sword for him, is that he does have the ability to go back to these people for more, but the people who are donating to him, I'm not entirely sure, have the ability to donate again.
And Eric, we've got a number of people who have written us emails who really don't like the idea of trying to compare Trump and Sanders. Jasper wrote, "It's a stretch to link Sanders and Trump, seeing that Sanders is all about policy, has a very good grasp of issues and data supporting his positions, while Trump has not shown this political rigor. Basically speaking, tarring Sanders and Trump with the same brush does Sanders a gross injustice." What do you think about that?
Yeah, I would agree with that sort of a comment. I mean, Bernie Sanders has been a member of Congress for 25 years now. He's dealt with major issues. Whether you agree with them or not, he has well thought out positions on issues of economic policy, domestic policy, and foreign policy. Donald Trump, one can't say that. I mean, listening to him in the debates where he has showed up, not last night, of course, he seems to have really very little grasp of macroeconomics, of international relations, and the other things that a president really needs to be able to master. Of course, the two men's style is very, very different, too. I mean, Bernie Sanders does not go around insulting people and calling other people names who are running for the same office and that sort of thing. I mean, both of them do appeal to a certain discontent among the voters, but it's differently sort of based. I'd just like to go back also for a minute, Bob, to a comment that JP, the previous caller, made about turnout. And I thoroughly agree with him that turnout in many ways has to do with the enthusiasm that voters have for a candidate. And Obama demonstrated that in 2008. Sanders seems to be demonstrating that now. And, you know, again, this may be a little bit of a stretched comparison, but here in Vermont, we had the lowest turnout in a midterm election ever in the fall of 2014 when Peter Shumlin just didn't inspire that sort of enthusiasm. And, you know, again, this, you know, is a comparison you don't want to press too far, but there are certain similarities between the Shumlin campaign and the Clinton campaign. Both of them rely heavily on large donors. Neither of them seem to have substantial grassroots enthusiasm behind them. Shumlin did get reelected because he was running against someone who was an inexperienced candidate who had difficulty raising money. Well, Bernie Sanders is an experienced candidate who's done very well raising money and generating both popular enthusiasm and small dollar contributions. So I thoroughly agree with what the previous caller said about Sanders' connection with the voters in terms of this enthusiasm is something that is going to take him a long way in these primary and caucus states.
Today in the program, we're looking at the Democratic presidential race. Iowa next Monday night. Your thoughts, 1-800-639-2211. This is Vermont Edition on VPR. Welcome back to Vermont Edition. I'm Bob Kinzel. We're looking at the Democratic presidential race today on the program. Our guest, Megan Rebel, who's a political science professor at Norwich University, and retired Middlebury College political science professor Eric Davis. Your thoughts, 1-800-639-2211. Let's talk to Greg in Burlington. Hey, Greg, what's on your mind today?
Hey, I think that it's kind of absurd when people have, you know, we're not taking Sanders seriously as a viable, quote-unquote viable candidate, because basically, I mean, he's the only candidate who was able to assert himself on the national scene, even previous to running in an election, that represented, other than Elizabeth Warren, an actual backbone against what destroyed the country in 2008, and maybe you could say since the Nixon administration, which is unbelievable levels of wealth destroying the economy for the rest of the nation. And even the failed Obama presidency, which had an opportunity in 2008 to not hire cronies like it did to put in charge of various positions involving the economy, you know, sold us out. So Hope and Change was a lie. And Bernie is the only person now, 8 years later, that people are seeing as being a legit with a record and actually having the backbone to actually fight, other than Elizabeth Warren. So to me, it's incredulous to think that political analysts would have this sort of, like, I'm so surprised that he's a viable candidate on the part of the American people and that he has cross support amongst party lines with regular folks. And it's because they're sick of lies and they're sick of people selling out when they have opportunities to do the opposite. And they see this guy's record as actually doing the things that he says he will do. And I think they see him as actual hope and change rather than more of the same with Hillary and, in fact, corruption and cronyism. And then the worst option, which is Donald Trump. So I think that it's not surprising at all, unless I think you're so polluted by the last 25, 35 years of how, you know, politics go.
Okay, Greg, can I ask you a question?
Yeah, absolutely.
So when Bernie announced last May at Waterfront Park in Burlington that he was going to be a candidate in the Democratic race for president, did you think at that time, and he was polling down around 5, 6, 7%, did you think at that time that, wow, he would be in a dead heat with Hillary Clinton 3 days before the Iowa caucuses?
Yes, absolutely. And I'll tell you why. It's because, people lost homes. People saw rampant destruction of their economy. They saw banks getting away with it, and they saw Goldman Sachs being hired into political jobs by the president who was supposed to, on record, do hope and change. Mm-hmm. And I think that it took about 6 years, 7 years for people to figure out that both Hillary, Obama, and the rest of the Democrats were liars, and they were just basically soft, white guilt Republicans. And they saw Bernie's record going back how many years now as being a consistent fighter for people and labor and other issues.
Okay.
So I just think it took the failures of selling out to trade agreements and zero hope and change, and the people finally got it. So okay. I was not surprised.
Greg, thanks very much for your phone call.
I do think there is something to that. I think Bernie Sanders represents a Barack Obama candidate of 2008 and the, as Sarah Palin called it, hopey changey stuff. I think he represents that idealism. And Hillary Clinton represents the legacy of Barack Obama as president. And so if you are dissatisfied with how Barack Obama has performed as president, and you really did believe in his rhetoric in the 2007-2008 time period, then Bernie Sanders does seem to be an incredibly appealing candidate. If you are more concerned with maintaining what minimal gains Barack Obama has been able to achieve under his administration, then a Hillary Clinton seems like a more practical choice.
Let's turn to Bob in Walden. Hi, Bob. Welcome to the program.
Hi, thank you. First of all, to equate Sanders with Trump is slander. Moreover, he is not a socialist. He's a democratic socialist. And there's a big gap between those two. Obviously, Megan is a Clinton supporter. This tireless refrain of talking about idealism versus pragmatism is just a way for the money-controlled media to put down Bernie. Let's think about this. Obama has never really gotten up and fought the Republicans and come on TV and addressed the American public with the obstructionism that they're doing. Bernie would do that. I think it is fear-mongering to call Bernie an idealist, a socialist. He is actually dealing with the real issues that affect people's lives, and that's why he's having so much respect, because he's talking about real health care, getting insurance companies and the pharmaceuticals out of our health care and letting doctors treat their patients. He's not in the pocket of Wall Street, such as Hillary, who has already taken $600,000 from Goldman Sachs, who inherited so much in the financial collapse that destroyed millions of people's lives. So I would like these talking heads, and excuse me, Megan, but I think you are a talking head. And
well, Bob, let's make sure we have a little respect here as well and not go too far overboard. There have been a lot of people across the country who have described this race as voters looking at it. And if they vote with their heart, that they want to vote for Bernie Sanders. And if they're more pragmatic, they may vote for their head. So, I mean, there are a lot of people who believe that. And we do appreciate your phone call. But let's turn to Christopher in Tunbridge. Hey, Christopher, what's on your mind today?
Well, you know, I think several of your guests have succinctly put, you know, the difference between Bernie and Hillary into context. But I don't think your speakers really get that there are a large number of us who absolutely will not vote for Hillary Clinton. We're mostly middle class, and we can't do it. We would rather vote for Donald Trump. And I know you've had a lot of analysis around saying people who vote for Bernie wouldn't vote for Trump, and that's just not true. We just could not in any way get behind a Hillary presidency. Too much bad water has gone underneath that bridge. It amuses me to hear, you know, your guests. They are completely, in my mind, out of touch with middle-class America and where we're at and the pain that we're feeling.
Okay, Christopher, let me just ask you a question. You're obviously a very strong Bernie Sanders supporter. People might be very surprised if the race is Hillary Clinton against Donald Trump, you're voting for Donald Trump. Tell us why.
Trump will win because we cannot, even though Trump's, you know, in my mind, Trump, you remember, he went on the WWE there. In my mind, a lot of the policies in the talking points that Trump is putting out, it's all showmanship. It's all Trump is a very intelligent man, you know, putting on a show for a Fox News created public. And, you know, but by the same token, there are a large number of us who feel Hillary Clinton is a criminal. And that is a sentiment that I'm not espousing just myself. Many of my peers feel the same way. And like I said to when I called in initially, I have supported Bernie my entire life. And what Bernie has said is we can, with enough people behind us, we can make change. And there is no amount of people that could get behind Hillary Clinton to make any effective change at all. She wouldn't do it. I think Donald Trump, at least for his first term, would understand he needs to get reelected again and would be open. And he's the only other candidate I've heard say socialized medicine. You know, it just is beyond me that people don't think that Bernie supporters would support Trump over Hillary.
Okay.
It's not the case. And I'm a lifelong Vermonter.
Okay, Christopher, I think we got the point. Thank you very much. Eric, how many people supporting Bernie who, like Christopher, who just can't vote for, they say they can't vote for Hillary Clinton, would actually support Donald Trump?
I don't know. And you know, the situation that people, when they're polled or asked in these trial heats about, is very different than when you actually get nominees at the end of the summer. And there's another complication here, too, which is that if Trump and Sanders were to end up as the nominees, Michael Bloomberg says that he would run as an independent for president. He's probably one of the few people in the United States who can afford to do so, along with Donald Trump. But Bloomberg is going to have all the same liabilities that all the callers have referred to before. Someone who is from New York and represents Wall Street and would be a billionaire running a largely self-financed campaign. I think what we've heard from many of these callers, though, is some of the difficulties that Hillary Clinton would have as the Democratic nominee, which is, I think, one of the reasons. You know, Bernie doesn't want to run a negative campaign and doesn't want to campaign against Hillary. But I think it's clear that she doesn't generate – I mean, she has a certain core group of supporters who are very enthusiastic about her. But among the population as a whole, she, especially the Democratic primary and caucus electorate, she doesn't generate the enthusiasm that Bernie Sanders does. She's a flawed candidate in that she has difficulty connecting with voters. There are the concerns about ethics and transparency. And the other thing is, in her recent messaging, she seems, at least to me, to be focusing more toward the past than the future. And I don't know if the voters want a third term of Obama, which is what she practically came out and said she represented a few days ago.
Last email from Jonathan in Shrewsbury. It doesn't help Bernie when some of his supporters, like the recent caller, refer to Barack Obama's 7 years in the White House as a failed presidency. Have they ever heard about the nuclear deal with Iran, opening to Cuba, or the Affordable Care Act? Let's get real, folks. Let's talk about the candidacies on a factual basis. A lot of strong feelings out there today. That's probably a very good thing for our democratic process. Many thanks to our guests today, Megan Remmel and Eric Davis. We really appreciate you being on the program.
My pleasure, Bob.
Thank you.
And we will have live coverage Monday night from the Iowa caucuses, so be sure to listen in. Vermont Edition is produced by Rick Sungari and Sam Gale Rosen with production assistance from Anna St. Marie. Mary Williams directed the program. Our executive producer is Patty Daniels. I'm Bob Kinzel. Have a great weekend.